Welcome back. Oh, yes. Nice, fresh start. Welcome, everyone. Episode 31. We keep going. We keep moving. Straight into the point today, because there's a lot that Tevin and I want to talk about. This is going to be a very sports-centric episode, but as we like to do here on The Big Vibe, it's going to be more of a big-picture sports conversation as opposed to a limiting conversation. We don't want to have a conversation that all our listeners can't listen to. So Tev and I wanted to talk about something that is of interest to both of us. So I'm going to paint some context to start off the episode. So I have a short little holiday now. I'm at home, and on Tuesday I decided that I've been wanting to watch a movie for quite some time called Air, and it's all about Jordans, Air Jordans, right? And it's got Matt Damon and Ben Affleck and Viola Davis and Chris Tucker, and it's a star-studded team, and it's all about how Nike signed Michael Jordan, and the rest is history, right, as we know. But it's kind of interesting that I watched this movie at the same time as this week's breaking news, where the greatest, as you can see, Tevin and I are both sporting Argentina jerseys, where the greatest footballer of all time moved to the MLS in a groundbreaking kind of deal. So let me just quickly talk about Air. So just first of all, if you haven't seen it, go watch it.
I will. I mean, on my list.
Is it a spoiler? Because this is like historical. It's like if you watch Pearl Harbor and it's like spoiler alert, the ship gets bombed. Do you know what I'm saying? Is it a spoiler? Does it count? You know. Okay, so spoiler alert. Then, in case that's what you want to say. Okay, so basically what happened is, when Michael Jordan was about to be drafted into the NBA, he was the third draft pick. Portland actually missed out on picking him. They had the second pick and they didn't choose him. The Bulls chose him at third. Crazy. But and he was pegged to sign with Adidas. So the three biggest brands in basketball back then were Converse was the biggest. Second was Adidas. Third was Nike. And Nike was actually about to kind of leave the basketball game. They were really unsuccessful. They were pegged as like white people's jogger shoes, especially with the Forrest Gumps, the Cortezes. And this was a big play by the scout. His name is Sonny something, played by Matt Damon in the film. And he pegs it all on Michael Jordan. And long story short, we know Nike signs him, but a big part of the deal that happened was negotiated by Michael Jordan's mother. And I didn't know that she negotiated this. So they were on the verge of signing him, and she phoned this agent and she said to him, if you want Michael Jordan to sign with you, you have to cut us into the revenue that any Air Jordan makes forever, for the future. Like, whenever you make it, because obviously they built the shoe around him, and that was revolutionary in itself. They changed the color game. Like, they were supposed to only have 49% of another color and 51% white. They made it more red, and he was fined $5,000 a game, which Nike covered. Which I also thought was cool. But this deal was, she said, we want him to have a cut of the money that he makes. Now, Michael Jordan makes a passive income of $400 million a year off Nike, off Air Jordans, right? So, and ironically, the owner, Phil Knight, or the CEO of Nike at the time, was like, what's the worst that can happen? We've only made like $3 million off a shoe. And now here we are, and this is $400 million passive income that he makes, okay? So what we want to talk about to start off is how that kind of set the tone for a change in the way things were done. Prior to that, these big brands signed these players, and it was just an endorsement deal. Like, we give you X amounts of money for, in his case, was $250,000 every year for 5 years. And then this endorsement deal changed. And since then, we've seen the Kyrie Irvings come out. We've seen all these different brands of shoes. Enter Messi. Now, Messi has moved to the MLS. Let me ask you first of all, because I've been talking now for a good, I don't know how long, and I'm sure the lovely people want to hear your voice too. Tev, impressions on the Messi deal. Let's go. Tell me, what were your thoughts?
I heard read snippets of his interview that he did with Mundo about his reasons why he moved over. So I know there was the fanfare about him and the homecoming to Barcelona. Everything was set. Everything was in place. They got authority from La Liga to allow change in the wage structure of La Liga, and this presented the final hurdle in which Messi would come back home. But he said, one, that there was still some animosity from the last time when he left, and he said she got kicked out. And the second thing is, he didn't want to have the club having to sell players and have people chop their wages in relation to his move there. So I understand that. I think, yeah, until I understood what the breakdown of the contract was, I didn't think that it was a necessary move to go to the States. I thought that he'd still have ample opportunities and ample offers in Europe. Didn't necessarily have to be in France. He could have gone to play in Italy. The Premier League has always wanted Messi to play there. You know you'll get bank any day of the week. Newcastle, City.
He's never going to come to... I don't think he's ever going to come to...
like the culmination of football, but... Yeah. Once I understood the deal, I was like, okay, cool, it makes sense. Go get your retirement package that side, and you'd be... I think a lot of the time, we don't, as fans, take into consideration lifestyle for a footballer. Yeah. Like, a club could be amazing, like Manchester, or renowned two big clubs, but weather-wise, it's
not a good place,
rough, man. It's rough. It's raining pretty much every single day of the week, as an example, but... Yeah, a bit surprised initially.
Okay.
I think I'm really surprised.
So I think you touched on a lot of key points there, but let's quickly, just to relate it to like what we were talking, what I opened up with Air, let's break down just the contract slightly so that people that don't know can understand. So there was obviously competing offers. Barca was, I think he was right in saying that they were going to leave him hanging for quite a while to figure it out. But then there was a big offer from Saudi Arabia. I think it was close to, what was it, 300 million euros a year or something along those lines. Okay, so stupid, crazy, huge money, obviously, which I think a lot of people thought was going to happen. You know, I thought, I think a lot of people thought Benzema went, and he's on a similar contract to Ronaldo, like 100 million euros a year. N'Golo Kante just left as well. It looks like Fab Romano just dropped the news. I think N'Golo Kante is going as well. They're talking about all sorts of other players, Busquets, Jordi Alba, all these players that they're talking about poaching to take there. So it was a huge contract that Messi would have gotten from them. But he said, obviously, he didn't want his family to necessarily have... He said they've had a bit of a difficult time in PSG or in Paris. You know, he's been booed and stuff, but... Why wouldn't they go live in Miami? Because come on, it's Miami. You know what I'm saying?
It's
like,
fresh. It's fresh.
And he did say it's not about the money. But let's just be honest here, okay? Because this contract that Inter Miami have offered him is ridiculous. And I'm pretty sure David Beckham phoned him, because this deal is not dissimilar to David Beckham's deal when he went to the MLS, right? So let's to compare it to how groundbreaking it is when in terms of like Michael Jordan. So for Messi, what's happening is now he's going, he'll have whatever his wage is. They haven't really discussed what his wage, weekly wage will be, but that's not where the money's going to come from. Instead, where his money's going to come from is that Apple is running a subscription for the MLS. He's going to get a portion of every subscription. Then you have Adidas is cutting him into the deals of every shirt sale. And now if we look at like PSG's numbers, they were talking about like 70 million euros a year that they were making, selling just, Messi shirts. So, you know, like I think America's probably even more money. I think it's more
commercial.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more people. It's more commercial. It's more everything. And then there's also talks about him, perhaps similar to Beckham, being able to become a franchise owner himself in the long term. Which, you know, that's kind of like a long-term passive income kind of thing. So do you think that the deal kind of makes sense to you? Like at the point he's in his career, in terms of, do you think it's not about money as much as he says, or just, do you want to be cynical? Where are you going to go with this?
No, I think it's definitely about money. And he's obviously trying to paint the picture of the immediate time that we're in, so the present, or it might not look like a lot of money that I'm getting. I'm probably having slight reduction in wages, but long term, we know passively what it's going to make is likely going to be not as successful. I don't think we'd probably reach the heights of what Jordan had with his brand, but we're seeing more and more, I think, in this day and age, a culmination of how a footballer is a brand, or rather a name, an athlete becomes a brand rather than a footballer. It's almost like the football sound becomes secondary. If you think of David Beckham, David Beckham is a brand. People that don't watch football, people just know of David Beckham. He's a suave dude that has these various assets. He's married to Posh Spice. He's a brand.
Yeah.
Similarly, Ronaldo. People know Ronaldo. If no one watches football, they know CR7. Everyone knows and it's honestly gotten to this point where brands become so marketable. I think from a company point of view, we always try, and obviously in marketing, push the brand. How can we uplift the brand? How can we make a brand more marketable? I think it made sense at the point at which he is in his career. I think he's, what, 35?
35,
He's done all he's needed to in Europe. He's done so on the global stage. And I think this ties in well with, as you said earlier, this is the World Cup that's coming in for the US, 2026. And we saw how well the almost ambassador role had for both him, I think ex-players like Pirlo. I think there were a number of other, like Beckham, as an example, for Qatar.
Yes.
Again, you're getting so much money for being the brand and representing what is essentially the ambassador role for these upcoming tournaments. So I think at the place he is in his career, it made a lot of sense. Get a nice severance package or a retirement package there and set yourself up, man.
And also, like, why go live in Saudi Arabia if you could go live in Miami? Like, come on.
Exactly.
Miami is where it's at.
Getting
bro,
the lifestyle there, man. You're getting everything that you desire from, like, the commercial point of view. So him as a football player, okay, cool. It's a bit of a step down. But lifestyle-wise, family, you have all the entertainment that you can there. So there's all the Disney Worlds, pretty much. Started there and established there. You have a lot of the fashion weeks. New York is not too far. Just a plane trip away for him and his wife. South America and Argentina isn't too far a trip either. So it just makes a lot of sense if you're looking at it more holistic.
I was also thinking, like, just in terms of, like, the timeline of like the time zone, that I think they're on the same time zone as Argentina, so they'll actually Argentinians will actually be able to watch him a lot more than they would now, which is also another thing where the MLS is gonna vastly benefit from this, you know. And so, like I said, why not go live? And I think I do believe him when he says, like, that he's looking out for his family, because I don't know, man, like, I'm not saying it's not a nice place to live, but I'm saying I'm pretty sure that Miami is a nicer place to live than in Saudi Arabia. And, you know, when you're talking about this kind of money, like 300 million euros a year is stupid, life-changing money.
Yeah.
But then so is 50 million euros a year. There's only so much money you can spend. There's only so much money that you need. So it's still, like, you know, and it's got this longevity. Like we said with Beckham, when he signed for Inter Miami, he signed for LA Galaxy.
Galaxy.
I think it was, and he's part of his deal was that he would be able to become a franchise owner. And that's when he started Inter Miami. And very cleverly, the signing of Messi has upped the value of that club significantly. So Beckham is once again showing how he's an elite businessman. Like he really is. Every man wants to be him. Every woman wants to be with him. He's that kind. He is that guy. You know what I'm saying? But I actually wanted to speak to you about something else that I think is becoming quite interesting in the kind of context of world sports, not just football. Mm. But so we spoke in a previous episode about the sports washing. We spoke about various aspects of it, touching on the Qatar World Cup. But we also spoke about the LIV golf tournament, which was the Saudi-backed golf tournament, which came out, I think it was about 2 years ago it was announced, and there were some big names that went there. And the PGA kind of lashed back, and they fought back, and they were like, okay, if you play in the LIV tournament, you lose your PGA card, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A whole bunch of different rules.
Major tournaments,
Yeah, and they actually compared it. They likened it to, like, you know, if you support the LIV tournament, you're essentially a silent supporter of events like 9/11, and, you know, this is sports watching at its finest. And this is the CEO of the PGA that was saying all these things. And now, lo and behold, this week, what has happened? The PGA and the LIV tournament have decided, or they've announced, not decided, they've announced that they are now going to merge these two tournaments. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a significant investment from the public Saudi investment fund into golf. And yeah, basically the same guy who said that this is like 9/11 came out and he's like, yeah, we just care about the game of golf. In a few years, you won't even think about what's happening here. You'll just think about what's happening in the game. And I'm like, you are explaining sports washing to us. That's exactly what you're doing. You're telling us that we are sports washing. Okay, so it's super ironic and super hypocritical and all these things. But at the same time, we see all these players that are going into Saudi Arabia, all these football players and etc. Now, we were talking a little bit off air, and I just want to get your opinion. We know that sports has always been like a looking glass into the kind of political climates. As much as we don't want sports to have anything to do with politics, it does. It often does. What do you think this says about like the world as a whole, like with what's going on here? You know, just, I know we're moving off Messi a bit now. Now we're talking more like kind of bigger picture, but yeah. What is your whole take? And not like just about sports washing, but just like, what do you think this whole thing is kind of saying?
Yeah, I think it is like what you mentioned off air. It's the silent war, the cold war, but revolutionized. And now we're using sport as the basis in which we compete. So if we saw that there was a big uptake initially, it was, I think, just general foreign investment. If you take football into consideration, you had Abramovich, you had the Qataris, you had a lot of these almost individual players who had quite a bit of muscle to them in the financial point of view. And now we're seeing almost an overhaul of that completely by the Saudis. So because they have the extensive wealth at their disposal, they're able to not only segment one sport, but almost overlap and take over the entire sporting front. So we've seen it in golf, we've seen it in football, and I think we're going to see a lot more transition towards more Saudi-backed or owned sports, either teams or sports franchises or sports general ownership. And I think it comes back to your point that you said when you initially spoke about LIV and the golfing tournaments, that money talks, I would say. And that's just the nature of the game these days. If you have enough money, we're going to take the front, become the front runner in that. If we look at the Man United deal, an example, there's so many bidders that have come into it. But I think the Glazers are waiting on the Saudis to have an improved bid over I think it's the way the world works now. I think there's just an overtaking of ownership because the money's where it's at. What are your thoughts? Where do you think this is going?
Well, it's actually super interesting for me because I like seeing how this whole thing is like coming up now and like, you know, with the World Cup coming up in 2026, it is 26, right? Yeah, in America. Yeah. That's going to be a sick one, by the way. I think I'm going to try go to that one. That's going to be a cool World Cup to go to. But with that's coming up and like, you know, there's actually just a definite rise in American sports in general. You know, like I think the MLS is getting bigger, not just with the signing of Messi, but it is getting a bit more competitive. It's a huge league though. Did you know there's like 28 teams in that league? I actually didn't know that there's now 29 teams is about to end.
Like,
yeah,
it's like the way that NBA is, Eastern side, Eastern Conference.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're trying to, but anyway, so you see a rise in American sport. And, you know, at the same time, I kind of wonder, like, it's such a difficult thing to talk about because sports washing is what it is, right? And it's terrible. But, you know, it's something that you've alluded to in the past where there's like this kind of old guard or this old tradition that exists within the sporting world. I mean, it's all over the world, like, traditionalism as an example, like where you know, traditionalism in itself, like racism is part of traditionalism if you really want to go that deep into it, you know. And at what point is it like we need to give a chance for things to change or for things to get maybe not get better, but for people to question or to push the status quo, you know, to like to ask the right questions. Now I'm not saying that I support you know, Saudi's sports takeover necessarily, but I think it's very interesting that you see these things like how Chelsea had, I mean, the FA had no problem with Roman Abramovich being the owner of Chelsea for 20 years.
Yeah.
Until, and they knew who he was. He's always been a supporter of
Vladimir Putin. He is.
He's always been. It's not new. And now only when the public eye turned to them, then it was like, are we going to ban you and sanction you? It's like, but you knew what he was doing all along.
Exactly.
The PGA is another example. They're all well and fine to talk about all these things. And now look where they're at. So
yeah,
I'm reluctant to be like, the Saudi takeover is hostile and it's this and it's that. And I do see it as sports washing to an extent, but I also like, I'm reluctant to just let it be that because, you know, like, I just think that there's so many of these old kind of like, this is not the way it's done kind of things that it's like, yeah, but things do need to change. And when you see the rise of American sport, you know, and the idea of what exists in the West and then what exists in now, let's talk about the Middle East. I think it's just really cool to see how there's a battle of ideologies being played out on the sports field, you know, and how these personal brands being athletes are being used to push agendas, essentially. And what we want is more competitive leagues, though, isn't it? Like, I'd like the MLS to be better. I'd like better players to go there, right? You don't just want the Premier League to be elite. You don't...
Yeah, we've discussed many times that the Premier League is the Super League. If we're being real, that is the Super League. And a lot of the time, I think it gets so much credit for being English. Yet, if you take a look through pretty much every team, there's probably a 60% ratio of foreigners that make up the team. I think there was that stupid stat that there hasn't been an English person that's won the Premier League ever. So, since it's been the Premier League. And Ferguson's a Scot. So there's no Englishman that's ever won the Premier League.
Oh, wow.
Did you think, it just shows that foreign investment, foreign managers, foreign players are what drives the nature of the league to such a high level. And I think what's so curious is that we've now seen almost the Uno reverse card in terms of ideology. Everything that I can remember from when I was young, it's this is how the Western world are doing it. Everyone needs to follow suit.
Yeah.
This is almost the epitome of what... existence should look like. You need to mirror, you need to follow, and you need to align with what the Western world looks like. And now you're having almost like the reverse of that, where there's so much, let me call it, evolution. There is, I guess, a adaptation that's been happening and growing and developing in the Eastern world that you're almost now at the fore where, from a power perspective, there's so much influence that is integrated into not only social and not only the sporting side of things, but also the social side of things. And it's so interesting to see how it all plays out. I mean, I'm wondering where we go to from here.
Yeah, no, it is really cool, you know, and like I said, it's super interesting. And, you know, I'll just kind of wrap up this episode just by saying that, you know, it's super easy for us to sit here and be like, oh, I can't believe he would move for money or whatever, where I'm like, you would move for a 50% increase on your current monthly income. You would move for 50, even if you're well within your means of what you're earning now and you're enjoying your life, you get to go to the football every weekend, you get to do what you want, you would move for 50% more, right? And it's all well and fine to sit here and to talk about, oh, I can't believe he's moving there for money. And I'm like, but there's 100 million euros a year. And there's also like future naming rights. And it's a lot of money, man. Like, it's a lot of money. But I will say, I kind of like this move for Messi. I didn't think going back to Barca was the answer. I think he's had a bit of a tough time at PSG. I think they treated him pretty badly. And I quite like it. I'm like, why not go kick it in Miami with your boy Bex? Yeah. Like, I mean, there's always things in life. You know what
change
I'm saying? Like,
and change it up.
Change it up.
And I think another benefit for him is that Americans speak Spanish. So again, as you said, there were difficulties in Paris and in France that came with a bit of a language barrier. Maybe that's one of the reasons that it didn't quite also get along with fans. And now you're almost home. because yeah, there's a lot of representation there as well. So,
and he's geographically much closer. And, you know, the Apple subscription deal, I think that's super cool. You know, and it's like a new gateway. And, you know, what we started off with was how, you know, like Michael Jordan's mom, actually, shout out to all the moms out there, but Michael Jordan's mom basically negotiated this contract for him. But then what was really interesting was that agent, Sonny, whatever his name was, the guy, forgive me for forgetting his name, but the guy who signed, who did all the hard work to get Jordan to Nike, he then, like in 2014, was part of a court case which helped these college players in the NBA, no, like in the NCAA, get more representation and more funding for using their names by these big brands. And, you know, like big ups to these guys getting, you know, like I'm just trying to like remove just, they're human beings as well. I'm trying to remove the whole, like, it's your responsibility as an individual whose career has got a certain timeline on it. It's your responsibility to make sure you represent the public interests of the world, which again is always manipulated by a certain angle. Mm. So all I'm going to say is, like, I like it for Messi. It's a lot cleaner in terms of like sports washing. He shouldn't have said anything about money. There's no need to say anything. It's not about money, because there's a lot of that just, you know, like, you lie. Yeah, like, it's okay. Yeah. It's okay if it's about money. But, like, you know, I like the angle where he was like, I want my family to live a good life, you know? And I'm like, yeah, they will. They will. In Miami, they're going to live a sick life.
Come,
you know?
It's going to be plush there in the States.
For sure.
But yeah, sure. Credit to Sonny, man. I really appreciate, and it's nice to see that people aren't taken advantage of. I know that a lot of these managers and agents, they make a massive cut. We've seen some of the fees generally these days. So it's nice to know that these people get the necessary leverage that they need. Not necessarily, I'm not saying go to the extent of extorting people out of money, but to get to the point where they're able to market themselves as a brand, it makes sense. With the very short duration that you have at your sporting best, I mean, it's what, 10 years, 12?
Yeah,
maybe 16 and a push. It's nice to see people are taken care of post, thinking long term. It's not just I'm in the now, I'm earning whatever I'm earning, I'm playing at this very prestigious club, but there are some considerations to what happens post this very short
time. And it's an interesting time to be alive, because, you know, often I keep reading the stat that, like, and this can be our wholesome moment for the end of the episode, is like, there is no better time to be alive than right now, in that racism, although it is very far from not existing, racism is better statistically than it's ever been. You know, in terms of famine, poverty, war, all those things, statistically, right now is better than it's ever been. And it's just, you know, like, it's so interesting to see how, like, these ideological battles are being fought, but also at the same time how individuals are starting to take cuts from, like, these big corporations. And, you know, like, we're seeing these kind of wars being waged. And, you know, I'd much rather sit here on the night that it is tonight and talk about this with you than to sit here and to talk about, like, an imminent, and I know there is war still going on around the world, don't get me wrong, but I'd much rather talk about how these are the battles that are going on than, as opposed to, like, I don't know, like Hiroshima, Nagasaki, like those kinds of, you know, proxy wars, etc. So let's just, like, let the guy get his paycheck, have fun in Miami. We'll have fun talking about it. We hope that everybody has fun listening to us talk about it. If you do, please like, share, subscribe, etc. We appreciate everyone for being here. Tev, I think that's a wrap from my side. Anything from you?
That's it, Ben. I think the last to say is that we'll see you again next week.
Yep.
For the big Bible with Tev and Ty.
You know, see you then.